we at ACCFS have really enjoyed and appreciated the opportunity that we have had for many years to get together with the elders' wives and to spend time with you and to get to know you and to share a little bit and encourage. And so we are excited to do that again in this setting in Gridley. We're going to speak on who God is, kind of focusing on one verse of James and really speak to the attributes of God and characteristics of God. And it's going to be a little bit of a slower pace. We're going to ask for some reflection time. But we really want you to reflect and to think through who God is and how he has shown himself faithful in your lives. I'm going to turn it over here to Brother Matt in just a moment. But one more time, just a warm welcome from the Gridley Church. Warm welcome from ACCFS. Thank you for being here. And let's learn a little bit more about who God is together.
Well, greeting in Jesus' name. It's wonderful to be with you. I've met many of you in person here this morning. Many of you I've not, but right now I just extend greetings. I couldn't help but think, as Brother Arlen introduced the topic of God is, just how now intimidated I feel to answer that, right? In 45 minutes or whatnot, we realize that God is so expansive and so great and so beyond our knowing that this will just be kind of a scratch at who he is. And so we acknowledge that. Furthermore, we would also say that there's just not near enough time to say all that he is. And so we're going to narrow the things that we will talk about here today. As Brother Arlen mentioned, though, this next hour is going to be reflective. So I see some of you, you know, popped your pen open and you're ready to write content down. I'm going to tell you right now that there's not going to be a lot of content to write down in the next number of slides. Actually, there will be some things for you to record and to muse over and to reflect. Think about this next hour as being more reflective than it is teaching, if that makes sense. More meditative, all right, as we consider God. Now, we're going to actually narrow our focus on a key verse in James. You're familiar with this verse. James chapter 1, verse 17 says, "Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning." Wonderful verse. And with this verse, we're just going to go into just three aspects of God. We're going to take this verse and break it into thirds. The first one being, he is a giver of good gifts. We'll talk about God as a giver. We'll talk about God as a father of lights. That's the middle part. And then the last part there, no variableness, or he is faithful. God is faithful. And so that will be kind of to give you a little bit of forest for the trees. Well, those will be the three concepts. So there it is. I said the content, right? So if that was all that you were here for, you can go and enjoy the refreshments. But so now we're gonna reflect on what those things mean, right? We're gonna try to allow that to kind of saturate our hearts. Now, we also, just to give you a little bit of preview, for each of those three concepts, we have selected a biblical account passage. And they've been carefully chosen to illustrate that. So kind of a biblical example, you might say. So be listening for that. And then we're going to kind of take the content of those three things and make it into kind of one basic truth statement, like this is true because of what we've learned. And then finally have a reflective time where we just reflect and say, okay, I see how it was true for so-and-so in the scriptures. How is it true for me? Okay? So that's where the reflective part comes from. The handout that's before you really contains all the content, so no worries there. Okay? Now, let's talk about that first one. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above. Now, you can see the imagery here of the sun, and we have the lights and the stars, and we have this earth, and notice we have the shadow of the earth, and the shadow really is all earthly, isn't it? There's no shadow in God. And so God is that sun. And that's really what James is speaking to. He's drawing this likeness from the grandeur of what we see in the sun and the realities of our lives and the shadows and the seasons and the turning and all of those things and the constancy of God. And we see wonderfully that God is a giver of good things. That's what the verse says. It says, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above. Just look at that picture here. Now we're zooming in on this earth, right? The us part. But you can see the God part there. It's the illumination. It's the sun rays. It's the constant giving that the sun provides the earth for that gift of a flower, right? Of the green grass. I think it's kind of a fun thought. If we were to kind of back up, you know, a couple thousand miles and watch the earth turn, you would see things come to life. Flowers respond when the sun is up. And then when the sun goes down, what does it all do? Things and people go to sleep. You know what I'm saying? It's like activity, life just kind of follows the sun. And then it kind of trails off when the sun goes around. I think you would see that. We see that in the foliage. We see that in the animal life. And that's what we see here in this picture, that God is a giver. And if the goodness of God was not radiating towards the earth, we would quickly perish, right? The earth would not last very long at all without that constant giving. We see here that every good gift and every perfect gift is from above. Okay, so that's the first one. How do we meditate? How do we reflect on this? How do we really appreciate this? Okay, so here's the biblical account. I will read it. It's out of Genesis. We read this in Genesis chapter 16. Now, this is a very interesting story. And furthermore, I might say this is a very interesting character to learn from, okay? Because the center of this story is Hagar. Do you have any Hagars? Do you have any children that you named Hagar? Do you have any grandchildren named Hagar? Any children or grandchildren named Sarah? I would guess that nobody has a Hagar because Hagar is not a role model. Hagar might be the most unlikely character, but she's the center of this example. And the reason why Hagar was selected is, if this is true for Hagar, you can believe it's true for you. God comes and touches Hagar, the most unlikely woman, in the most amazing way. We're going to read the account up here. I mean, we could have had the example of Mary, the mother of Jesus. And I think you would all think, oh, come on, I'm no Mary. Or we could have pulled the example of Moses, and you might say, well, I'm no Moses. We're pulling the example of Hagar here. God touches Hagar in a wonderful way that she leaves a legacy that we're going to kind of allow to inspire our meditation. We're going to read the account. Now, part of the account is not given. You know the story, but allow me to review it. Hagar was Sarah's handmaid. Because of a lack of faith in Abraham and Sarah, Abraham marries Hagar so that his promise from God can go forward. Hagar, we can sympathize with Hagar, can't we? What say did she have in this matter? This really wasn't a work of her own deed. She gets impregnated, and then Sarah doesn't like her. We understand this. This has a lot of humanness all over it. And she's let go. And so she flees. A young, pregnant woman on the run in the wilderness. And we read this. The angel of the Lord found her, that's Hagar, by a fountain of water in the wilderness, by the fountain in the way of Shur. And he said, Hagar, Sarah's maid, whence comest thou, and whither wilt thou go? And she said, I flee from the face of my mistress Sarah. And the angel of the Lord said unto her, behold, thou art with child, and shall bear a son, and shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord hath heard thy affliction. Do you know what the word Ishmael means? The word Ishmael means, I have heard. I have heard you. Isn't that interesting? Now, we know Ishmael. This is going to be big rivals to Israel, right? This has got long implications, but Ishmael was a gift to Hagar. And the name of this gift was a message to Hagar, and that was, Hagar, I hear your affliction, and this is what I'm giving you. Because the Lord hath heard thy affliction, and she called the name of the Lord. Hagar now is going to name the Lord. Listen to what she names the Lord. And she called the name of the Lord that spake unto her, thou God seest me, or that the God that seest, the God that sees me. The God that sees me. For she says, have I also here looked after him that sees me? Wherefore the well that she was at was called Beer Lahora. Behold, it is between Kadesh and Bered. And the name of that Beer Lahora means God saw me here. We have this woman fleeing. She's despised. She's kind of a product of a bunch of humanness. She's outside of the chosen. And God has two messages for her. Hagar, I see you. Hagar, I hear you. And I'm going to give you a gift. And that gift was a child. We can read the rest of the story, okay? And so we learn this important truth statement that identify a good gift, and you will know that God sees you. If you can identify a gift, you can, and I could probably add in this statement from Hagar, that not only does he see you, but he hears you. By his gifts, he touches us and says, I hear and I see. So the first reflective time that we're going to have here, and I'm going to give like 20 seconds or, you know, 20 or 30 seconds. It seems like a long time. So only 20 or 30 seconds for you to consider gifts. Consider the gifts. Because if you can find a gift in your life, then you can trace it back to a God who sees and hears. Does that make sense? So, what good gifts have you been given? Okay, let's take 20 seconds for you to quietly consider that. Okay, thank you for doing that. I hope that you were able to. I would love now, if anybody felt comfortable to share a gift, we could have just kind of a popcorn. Here's a gift, there's a gift. Again, they're all around us. Sometimes it's helpful when one acknowledges something that we haven't thought of ourselves. So where it's too personal, don't need to share that. But where it's worth sharing, would you share some of the gifts that came to mind? Forgiveness and peace.
Salvation.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, Lord, where is there a place for us?
Yeah.
And we now live in Princeville in the congregate living.
Yeah.
And it's been so perfect.
I'm so glad that you shared that, because that opens up a whole new door of gifts, right? Some others? Godly family, you're something that you didn't select at all, did you? Yeah. Yes, people. Wonderful. Yes. Next door neighbor. Terrific. Yeah. Yes. So even in those redirections. Those redirections are wonderful gifts from him, aren't they? Okay. We need to move on. Okay, but that's what we want to think about. Now, here's the important point, right? When you acknowledge a gift, and we've just shared gifts, when you acknowledge a gift, the scripture says that that gift came from God. That gift is intended to tell you personally, I see you and I hear you. Okay?
Thanks for sharing that. And just one comment to Dixie's, at the moment of, it probably didn't seem like a good gift. Lots of times, sometimes at the moment of, it doesn't seem like a good thing. But then as time passes, as we take our eyes off the trees and look at the big picture forest, we realize that there is goodness working through the gifting that God gives to us. And it's really important, and you all know this, but it's an important discipline sometimes to take a little bit of time to reflect and just to write down the thankfulness, whether you call it a thankfulness journal or whatever you want to call it, but just remember and write those things down and kind of clear your mind of all of the good gifts that God has given you. Let's move on to the second part of the verse here where it talks about the Father of lights. Those good gifts come down from the Father of lights. And that phraseology is a little bit strange. I've read it many times, as you have, and you kind of, what does that mean? The Father of lights. You know, capital F, Father of lights. And I think it speaks a little bit, at least as I read that verse, it speaks a little bit to the idea that God is the origin. God is the creator. God is the light, and everything else is a little bit of a derivative of that. This idea of light and darkness, as Matt alluded to, we have corrupted it in today's world, right? I don't think about darkness much because every place I'm at, I can turn a light on, or I can pop my phone out and turn on the flashlight, right? Or whatever. Very rarely am I in total darkness. And yet in the time period, you know, when it was written, that contrast between light and darkness was extremely stark. Light was life. Light was giving. Light was direction. If you did not have light, you did not have anything. And so you see that imagery throughout the scripture. Jesus talks about it. The Psalms are filled with it. This idea that you are the light and in you is light type thing. And so remembering that God is the Father of that, that he is the author of that he is the origin of all of these things. The moon does not have light of itself. It's just a reflection of the sun. And yet on those full moon nights, you know, you can almost see as you walk around, you know, we can get that perspective confused. This room does not have light of itself. It's all just a reflection of the light bulbs and of the sunlight coming in from the windows and so on and so forth. The only spot where light comes from is from God. The example that we're going to talk through a little bit is a very familiar passage. This idea of Mary and Martha. And they were hosting Jesus, as they seem to do regularly. And you see this in a couple spots in the Gospels. But Martha is cumbered about with serving, it says. And this is just two verses. The verse before says, encumbered about with many things. That word literally means dragging around things. Martha was dragging around things. Good things. Serving Jesus, you know, good things. But she was dragging those around. And it says, Jesus answered and said unto her, and she was complaining, but again, that's in the verse of four. She was complaining and saying, tell Mary to come and help. Hey, look at me. I'm dragging around all these things. Come help me carry my burden, right? Tell Mary to come and do her part. And Jesus says, Martha, Martha, you are careful and troubled about many things. You are anxious and troubled. It's like this idea of turbulence. Like if you've ever seen a turbulent, you know, piece of water or whatnot. It's that concept that we're talking about there. You are careful and troubled about many things, but one thing is needful. One thing is needful in the midst of all of this dragging around. One thing is needful. And Mary has chosen that good part, which shall not be taken away from her. And so many things trouble us. What we need to understand is who God is. That God himself, his presence is our greatest gift. I could ask you, and I want you, when we have our next reflection moment in just a couple minutes, you know, on that notepad, if I would ask you to write down what's troubling you. What are you dragging around right now? What are you anxious about? What is stirring that pot, you know, that's keeping us from what he has called us to? Write those things down. What are the troubles that we have in our life right now? Because God tells us or encourages us to turn those and reflect those onto the one thing that's needful, which is God himself. The true statement that we have here is all the good that twinkles in his gifts are a reflection of the good that twinkles in him. This idea of, you know, twinkle, twinkle, little star, right? The father of lights, all those little stars, they are a reflection, distant reflection of the reality of who God is. And it's an interesting thought to think through all of those good things that we just were shared out there. How do those reflect the reality of who God is? They're an image or a shadow of who God really is. Let me give you an example. Two nights ago, we had a lot of thunder and lightning for a brief moment in the middle of the night. Not much rain, but some thunder and lightning. And there was a crack of thunder, and like kind of like clockwork, I heard the little pitter-patter of feet, and our four-year-old boy came and kind of crawled in bed beside us. Now, this is where I am not very Christ-like, right? Because I don't usually enjoy the fact that my four-year-old in the moment comes and lays in bed with us in the middle of the night when I'm trying to get my sleep. And yet when I'm a little bit calmer, you can kind of just reflect on snuggling up beside you. I have to think that that is a reflection of how God views us as his children. That when the lightning cracks or the thunder rolls, you know, when things are just not, the storm is there, you know, do we kind of curl up and crawl into, forgive the analogy, but crawl into bed beside our father? And he doesn't mind if it's 4 a.m. or 1 a.m. He is so thankful to have his child in his arms. It says that over and over and over again in the scripture. And I think, at least for me, it would be very helpful if I thought about all of those good gifts. I heard relationships. I heard salvation. I heard grace. I heard new homes and new relationships and new opportunities. I heard all these good gifts shared out. If we would view them as a reflection or as a shadow of God himself. And if we would encourage ourselves and sometimes force ourselves to move into a spot where we are forcing ourselves to sit at Jesus' feet, even though there are many, many things around us that we could drag about and be encumbered by. To remember that gentle picture of us, ourselves as children and God as the Father. And be thankful for that. And so that takes us to our next reflection point here. What does satisfaction in God look like in your life? What does satisfaction in God look like in your life? It says in Colossians that we are complete in him. Complete in Christ, in God. What does that look like in your life? Can you just take a few seconds, 20, 30 seconds, a minute, and just write down on your notepad or wherever, what does satisfaction in God look like in your life? Any thoughts to share? Or anything to share out?
And to make me content. I needed the Lord to make me content.
Sure. I really appreciate that, Loretta. What she had shared, for those of you who couldn't hear, is that when Aaron became elder, she struggled. I mean, there was a loneliness, and there was a really hard time at that transition. And yet God spoke to her and gave her that peace, realizing that her satisfaction, her completeness came from him. And that she didn't need Aaron in the same way. She still needed Aaron, but she didn't need Aaron in the same way, that completeness was going to come from God. And it gave her the energy and strength to keep going.
Arlen, can I just make a? Yeah. I'd like to make a comment and place my finger on just exactly what was said here is that whatever twinkles in God's gift is a reflection of what twinkles in Him. And so, what twinkled in Loretta's eyes regarding her husband was actually a reflection of what twinkles in God, and that is why God was enough. Does that make sense? You are not giving up anything necessarily that wasn't fully supplied in Him. So I just wanted to thread that needle because I think that was an excellent example of that.
That I can let go and let God, and just having that peace in the turmoil. That.
Thanks for that, Bev. And by definition, right? By definition, some of those terms we use are most real when the time is rough, right? Peace is most real when everything around us was most not peaceful, right? Hope is most hopeful when everything around us is most hopeless, and it's great to see how that can bring to fruition. Other thoughts to share? Thanks, Deb. That's a great point, and it leads us greatly into our next one, because what it spoke to was this idea of that reality of who God is, and reminding ourselves of what God is. Matt, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to piggyback a little bit on what Deb said too, because it was, as you talked about the blessing and then the blesser, as we think about our gifts are never a substitute at Christmas for us, right? We always direct our children to the giver of the gift. Grandma and grandpa is always far greater than the gift that they have given. And really, as you shared, that came very much alive. And that's what we were speaking of. The gifts that God gives are a reflection of Him. And He, in fact, is the greatest of them all, right? So I appreciated that.
The last part of the verse here speaks to God's faithfulness. Says with whom is no variableness nor shadow of turning, right? With whom is no variableness nor shadow of turning. Very few things in our life are not variable or have a little bit of flexuality within them. Very few things in our life are extremely and completely constant. In fact, we live, our emotions, our feelings, those are going to be variable. And the world that we live in is going to be variable. I mean, very practically, we have shadows, right? Shadows, the absence of light. As you know, myself gets between the sun and the earth, it makes a shadow, right? As a cloud comes across the sky, it makes the ground darker, right? The sun hasn't changed. It hasn't changed at all. But our circumstances and such things can change. And that can skew our vision a little bit about who God is and the reminding to ourselves of who God is. One of the most important principles when we speak of resiliency or encouragement, one of the most important principles is to ground ourselves in the reality of who God is. Remind ourselves. It's why I think you see David doing it over and over again in those Psalms. He is repeating to himself over and over again who God is. You are my rock. You are my strength. You are my guide forever and ever, as we heard this morning, right? And it's not just David. It's throughout the scriptures, right? And so in the midst of this, we that turns into faith, and we see faith seeing us through circumstances. An interesting example here, scriptural example, just to unpack a little bit. In Acts 12, we know this story. James is taken, Herod the king stretched forth his hands to vex the church, and James, the brother of John, was killed by the sword. And then when he saw that it pleased the Jews, he proceeded to take Peter also. And this is some verses cut out here to fit it onto a page there, but it says that he was kept in the prison to be brought out on Easter. And the night before he's to be brought out, it says that prayer was being made without ceasing of the church unto God for him. And the night before he's to be brought out, an angel of the Lord came upon him, and a light shined in the prison. A light shined in the prison. And he smote Peter on the side, raised him up, saying, "Arise, come quickly," and the chains fell off his hands. It says that he led him through and out of the prison, and he thought he was, remember this passage? He thought he was in a dream. Didn't even realize what was happening. And then he found himself outside, and when he had considered this thing, he came to the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose surname is Mark, John Mark's mother, Mary, where many had gathered together to pray. And as Peter knocked at the door of the gate, a damsel came and hearkened, named Rhoda. Do you see that in the midst of these circumstances, a reminder and a faith in who God is? God, you are a God in whom is no variableness. There's no shadow of turning. You are a constant, and we are called in faith to bring our requests to you. What I appreciate about this example, though, is that it's not all roses, because I actually sometimes get a little bit discouraged when I hear overly rosy pictures, because that hasn't been my life experience. It doesn't seem like everything always goes the way that I want it to. In fact, when it does, I start to question myself, because then it's like something's, I'm too much in control here, frankly. But you see that James did not survive. And there was a lot of grief and sorrow with that, I am sure. And Peter wasn't delivered right away with that prayer, right? There was a long time when he was in prison. It doesn't say exactly how long, but there was a long time of anxious waiting to know if God would deliver him. And yet through that, God still was working and is continuing to work. And so it's important for us to remember that when we feel him cool, it is our circumstances that has changed his heat. It is not God himself that has changed when things don't seem warm. It is the circumstances around us that have changed. And that is really when it drives us to a level of faith. One of you shared, I think it was you, Bev, the idea that these things become most real when the times are most difficult, right? I have a feeling that faith became extremely real for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego as they were being thrown into the fiery furnace, right? For Moses, as he had the sea in front of him and the strongest army in the world behind him at the same time. For Gideon, as he was, you know, looking at 135,000 soldiers in the middle of the valley, and he had 300. You know, those difficult times is when we are called and encouraged to really lean on in faith. And to accurately remind ourselves over and over and over again that, God, you have not changed. You are still the constant. You are still all-powerful. You are still all-knowing. You are still able to do anything. You are able to save with many or save with few. And then in faith, we turn that over to him. So let's do one more reflection. And again, this is maybe similar to what I asked you to do just a little bit ago if you were doing. I saw some of you writing down. But what circumstances right now, what circumstances in your life have clouded your vision of God? What things in your life can get in the way of who God is? Just take a little bit of time, if you would, and just write down a few thoughts of the circumstances that are troubling. Now, this is a little bit more personal in nature, and I'm not necessarily going to ask for a share out, although we do have the small group setting coming up, and that might be an appropriate place just to lean upon each other, lean upon the relationships and share out prayer requests or whatnot as an opportunity to encourage each other, to pray for each other, and to strengthen each other. But we're going to go through one more example. We're going to switch scriptures, and Matt's going to lead us through one more breakdown of one more passage.
Here in closing, I'd like to take Psalm 23. It's a very, very popular, very well-known passage, okay? This one was selected because it so well models the content that we've talked about this morning, but it's also familiar. I think it's almost memorized. I'm sure you can track with it just as it's read. And I think we're going to identify these three elements that the psalmist experienced. He experienced the gifts of the shepherd. It comes out in the psalm, just as you popcorned different, you know, a home and salvation and my neighbor and relationships. These are all gifts. The psalmist is pretty detailed about the gifts that he receives from God in the psalm. The second thing that we're going to look for as we read through this psalm is that it identify the shepherd as the gift. Where in this psalm does the psalmist declare God as the greatest of all the gifts? He himself. So let's watch for that. And then thirdly, identify the shepherd's faithfulness. Here again, the psalmist is going to celebrate the unchangeable faithfulness of God. Does that make sense? So I will just read this out loud, okay? And then we'll start with the top one, and I'd just like to hear some of your thoughts so as they trigger. So I'll read through it, and let's see if we can identify perhaps where each of those three are. So Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Identify some of the shepherd's gifts. What are some of the gifts that are there? Lack of want. Green pastures, right? This is written very much from the perspective of sheep, right? So yes, maybe green lawn is a gift too. So, but here, yes, and still waters, right? Very well, yes. Some other things? Gifts.
Direction.
Following the path. Isn't that wonderful? Leads me. That's right. What a gift of leading. Mm-hmm. He acknowledges that as a gift.
Protection,
very much.
Rest,
comfort, yes, through the valley.
Restored,
yes, that's a wonderful word of restoration, that he acknowledges this shepherd is completely restorative in who he is. I miss something.
Lack of fear,
that is a good gift, isn't it? Provisions, yeah. And perhaps there's more. I'm not like waiting for searching something, all right? I just wanted to give you time to think through the many gifts that the psalmist penned here as he reflective meditated on his shepherd. So now let's go to the next one. Where do we see that the shepherd or the psalmist identifies as God is the greater than all of those gifts that we've just mentioned? What are some of the phrases that mention the shepherd is the wonderful gift? Lynn?
Verse 1.
Isn't that wonderful? The Lord is my shepherd. Listen to what that says. I have the gift. I don't really want other gifts. That's what he's saying. Isn't that amazing? Contentment is not being able to do with nothing. Contentment is knowing when you have all that needs to be had. Does that make sense? And when that gift is God, we draw up content pretty quickly and early. When we don't know that gift is God, we're never content. Does that make sense? And that's what the psalmist is saying. The Lord is my shepherd. I don't want any more. Yes. Yes. Isn't it beautiful? And it's so simple, and all of us have this one memorized. That's why I think this passage is ready for meditation immediately. You know it already. And it's such a restorative verse to recite to yourself when you wake up at night. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Now, you might not agree with that at the moment. There's a lots of wants. But that's why we reflect and consider it. No, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. We re-speak it to ourselves until finally we get to a settling that I agree with that. Okay, because I will acknowledge I don't agree with that first verse all the time. All the more reason for me to meditate on it, right? To think about it, right? That was the number one verse that I had for the shepherd is a gift, but there's others, maybe. Does somebody have another place where the shepherd is acknowledged to being the gift? Yes. Being with him forever. I think that's great, Loretta. I also thought as we read through verse 4, thou art with me. This concept that God is with me. I think verse 5 is really interesting. I've always been mystified a bit at verse 5. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. So what's that mean, right? How do I even understand that? Can you imagine back in the day of David and war and all of this, that like the Philistines were, and he like sets his table spread out and starts to feast in front of the front lines. I mean, that is a person who has faith in something beyond himself, right? Who is able to eat and enjoy and talk with his neighbor when war is upon them, right? That's the imagery he's using here. I can like, when I go to battle, I mean, I can set a table out and we can just feast instead. What if we were to have that same as we think about the battles that we are in? Are you able to repose in battle, right? That is the faith of this psalmist, right? Okay, identify the shepherd's faithfulness. Where here do we get a sense of the shepherd's faithfulness? That was the third point.
I shall not.
Yep, a lot of just statements here. He maketh me, right? He does those things. Yes, Cindy? Yes. Yes. You know, whenever we come into words like forever, forever are good words because they're so not human. I mean, is there any forever really in our human experience? No. That like forever like is such a like an other word. like there must be something else. And that's a definitely God word. God can talk in terms of forever. And that's definitely his faithfulness, right? In our shadow of turning, we don't have a context for forever, but he does. Yeah, good one. All the days, yep. All is another God word, right? People struggle with words like all. Yeah. Well, thank you. Okay. So the intention here with this passage was just simply to say, we all know this one, right? We all know this one. Allow this one to minister and kind of elevate these three concepts that we shared with you here this morning. Arlen.
Thanks, sisters, for your time. Hopefully our intent was clear. It was an opportunity to reflect and to think through who God is.